Stripe Valley Podcast, All-Star Break Edition slash MLB Draft Edition slash the Yankees are not playing, so maybe that's a good thing edition. I'm Andrew Mearns, joined by Kun Shaw. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I'm just going to give everyone a warning. If I sound like weird or off more so than usual, it's because I'm also battling a little bit of a cold. Just because of the world we live in, no cause for concern. I am fully vaccinated and still got tested to be safe, so no putting me on the 10-day COVID IL. It's just a little bit of a cold.
You don't have to join Johnny Lasagna there.
I don't have to join Johnny Lasagna. Hopefully he can come off the COVID IL soon.
Yeah, they could have used him on a Sunday, but we will get to that, I'm sure. Yeah, the last time we talked, the Yankees were about to embark on a six-day road trip to the West Coast, which seemed daunting at the time. And I mean, even though the Yankees ended that 4-2, it was kind of a weird 4-2 because on paper it should have been pretty successful, but those two losses really left a bad taste in your mouth, especially since they came at the end of each series.
Yeah, besides like the obvious struggles that we've talked about with the hitting and all that and scoring runs and the defense, the one thing I don't think that you and I at least have talked about too much is the Yankees' like inability to finish off sweeps. They're really not very good at it. So like, you know, you go into the last game of a series, like having won the first two, you're like, all right, yeah, they, you know, they can do this and really go for the kill here. And then they just fall completely flat.
Getting shut down by Logan Gilbert of the Mariners, it was a weird one because you understood that this guy was actually pitching really, really well. And this is a guy who's not a schmuck or anything. He's a pretty good prospect and might be a key part of the Mariners rotation very soon if he isn't already. So you understand it. You just wish the offense would have done a little bit more and the team wouldn't have been so pathologically adverse to completing sweeps, which they have been all year. But whatever. Good pitching performance, tip your hat, whatever. Move on. The Astros finale was just so, so bad in the ninth inning. I can't believe how bad Chad Green looked.
Yeah, and like, you know, the Seattle one is just like annoying, but like the Astros one, man, that really gets to you. Because, you know, they actually look like they were about to complete the sweep against one of the best teams in the American League, probably the best offense in the American League. And they were up by 5 runs going into the ninth inning. And you had Chad Green, who's been arguably the best reliever on the team, coming in. You feel pretty good about that. Like, obviously, you know, the ninth inning started with Domingo Armand not pitching. He had just finished two, what looked like really relatively clean innings. So it was, I think it was the right decision to, you know, kind of bring him back out there because Chad Green had been used a lot recently, especially with Britton out, Zania out now, Loaisiga out, Chapman just being bad. So I understand the need to like, or the idea to just continue with Herman instead of like, you know, giving Green the fresh, clean inning. But end of the day, you come on, even with it, if it's two on, nobody out, you're Chad Green. You shouldn't be giving up 6 runs before you can get 3 outs.
No, starting Herman there, totally fine. You don't think anything of it when a pitcher who's been pitching well goes out to finish the ninth inning when the team's up 5 runs. And right. If Aaron Boone didn't react the way that he did, which was like pretty much as soon as Herman ran into trouble, he turned to Green, then fans would be calling for his head. And of course, fans are calling for his head anyway. And we can quibble a lot with Aaron Boone, but I mean, the decision-making was fine there. They weren't going to push it with Chapman. Herman seemed like he had the game under control. And at that point, even when Green was falling apart, it was happening in a hurry, too. I believe the whole thing only took like 12 pitches. It was very much like that one bad Aroldis Chapman blown save in Minnesota where he gave up those 2-2-run home runs. It just all happened in a hurry. And also the only real guy who he could have trusted at that point, Lucas Lickey, had already warmed up twice in that game. And I know that Lickey had gotten Altuve earlier in the series, but that's still such a tough matchup. And you'd rather just have your best there, even if your best has not really been looking very sharp in this particular game.
Yeah, and you could get like upset with like Aaron Boone for not having somebody else ready or whatever. But like, it's the same thing with like Chapman up before, obviously his struggles or whatever. When your closer is up and the guy who you feel confident in, when your best pitcher is up there as the reliever sent out to finish the game, you're not just going to have somebody ready. You know, things can fall apart and, you know, you can start getting somebody up, which, you know, Boone could have done. But like you said, it all happened so quickly that there was really no time to even respond to that. And then the only other thing like I would quibble about, but this is from my non-logical baseball brain talking. So, like, you know, this doesn't make any sense. But just stop pitching to Jose Altuve at the end of the game. I'd rather lose, like, 8-7 or 9-7 to Michael Brantley getting a walk-off than I want to see this guy hitting another home run walk-off.
Yeah, and, like, I get that point, too. But, you'd have the thing, people would be like, oh, why'd they pitch around Altuve when Brantley's such a good hitter? He'll beat you anyway. And
that's why I completely admit this is non-logical baseball brain of mine talking.
Yeah, as soon as, like, all these hits were happening in a string, you could really tell that the worm was turning and this is not going to end well. But what a bad way to end the first half. Maybe it's a fitting way considering how the Yankees have played for the most part. But
I will say the whole ripping off his jersey thing was, like, hilarious. Like, I did enjoy, like, the back and forth between the two teams leading throughout this series, between, like, the Astros and their giveaways during with the Yankees coming to visit Aaron Judge with pulling his jersey and all that. So I thought it was fun. Obviously, feelings about the Astros and what they did, notwithstanding, it's just always good to see two teams just trash talk and have fun with each other. So,
yeah, I am worried that Aaron Judge is never going to try to talk trash again, just because it's backfired twice in pretty big fashion between this and the 2018 Division Series when he was playing New York as they were leaving Fenway after winning game two. Then they didn't win another game in that series. And it's unfortunate because I like when people like Judge actually show emotion, because they don't always. So especially with the button-up Yankees culture, you just hope that he's still going to continue being him. But unfortunate that it had to play out that way for so many reasons, but also that.
But to be fair, at least when Judge did his thing, it was in the Garrett Cole complete game. So his jersey pulling was justified because he hit literally the game winner.
Yeah. Well, that was not great, but maybe they will be able to wash the taste of that out of the mouth at the All-Star break. Aaron Judge and Garrett Cole seem to have fun. So good for them. And maybe everyone else went fishing or just slept. Sleeping on a break is good.
Chapman was technically there too, which I found funny. Like,
he just participants.
He's ready for battle.
Yes.
But, no, I mean, overall, though, I think the team should be feeling a lot better about themselves going into the second half. I do think that, you know, the offense has actually turned a corner. I mean, they've been like a top 10 offense in baseball
over the month of June.
So, like, since the beginning of June, I mean. So, you know, it's definitely not as frustrating. Like, yeah, you know, they still get a lot of people on and don't score everybody, but I'm not going to get upset when they're only scoring 7 runs a game or whatever.
Yeah, they've been scoring enough to win most of these games. And obviously, they needed that. They only won that Garrett Cole start 1-0, so that was a tight affair. But again, the Astros are a good team, so you understand a little bit more then. But yeah, pretty much since the beginning of June, they've looked pretty good. Josh just had a good article about this, about how there's reasons for optimism because of how good the Yankees offense has looked over the past month and change. Yeah, they could probably still use another hitter in that lineup who could make things a little bit better, but they're encouraging signs. Even Glaber was starting to hit the ball hard in those last few games, so maybe he's finally turned a corner. And I gotta keep telling myself that, because otherwise this season is just gonna look like a total disaster.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely more encouraging to see, like, good process, bad results versus bad process and bad results. So I'll take it. And yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be opposed to them adding at the deadline. I would say maybe like a left fielder or center fielder or somebody who can do both, and probably another pitcher. And then you just kind of roll with what you have and hope that, you know, that works. I mean, I realistically, a complete overhaul is not happening midseason, and yeah, I'm not really calling for one either. But you get, you know, two big pieces if Hal's willing to just not buy a yacht this year, and maybe he could just wait off and buy another yacht next year. I think if they can add like a good outfielder, like a Joey Gallo type or a Chris Bryant, something like that. Again, I'm not going to do any trade proposal speculation here, but somebody like either one of those guys, and then like a good arm for the rotation who can, you know, slot in behind Garrett Cole as somebody who can actually trust. And then you potentially have like Jameson Taillon, who seems like he's turning his season around. I think 3 of his last 4 starts have been actually very good. Jordan Montgomery, he's not great, but, you know, he's solid and serviceable. Nestor Cortez is apparently Cy Young reincarnated with a mustache. I think that's where his secret power comes from. You potentially have Severino and Kluber coming back. I think you add one more arm to this rotation and you might be able to make some noise in the second half. And again, it's too early to start watching the standings and be like, oh my God, Boston won this game. Oh my God, Toronto didn't lose this game, whatever. Right now, just win the games that you're playing and worry about that. Obviously, you know, they have, I think, 8 games coming up against Boston over the next, like, couple of weeks, so that's going to be key. But just play, go out there, put the best team forward, do their part, and then, like, come September, we'll see where everybody is in the standings.
Yeah, realistically, I think the what will most likely happen is that the Yankees will add maybe a guy and maybe call it there, even though there I understand the one camp that says do more. And I also understand a little bit of the camp that says, why are we even trying to do anything this year? Because it has been so frustrating. They have really buried themselves, especially in the AL East. But in the wild card, they are right there. They're only a few games behind the A's. And, you know, they're in the mix with a bunch of other mediocre teams like the Mariners, Cleveland, and the Angels. Toronto is tied with them too. I think Toronto will hang out with them for the rest of the way. But there's a very good chance that the Yankees will be in the wild card game, and you got to fight for that, because this is not the time to sell and break down this core completely. We're not to that point yet. I think the only thing that would make me think that the Yankees should go that direction is if they went on basically a run like the Cubs just did, which was like losing 11 games in a row, to basically go in complete opposite direction of the Brewers and totally tank themselves. So I feel like the Cubs are probably going to be selling. But other than that, I don't see any way that Hal Steinbrenner agrees to sell with this team unless they went on some really bad losing run. So they're going to give it a try, and, well, might as well.
Yeah, I don't know what the Yankees are selling that other teams would be buying outside of potentially, like, trading Aaron Judge away. Like, I will not entertain that notion.
No.
But besides that, I don't know what anybody wants from this team. I don't want this team.
Yeah, Aaron Judge is not going anywhere. Even if they went on a bad run, they still have him for next year, and they're going to try to compete for 2022, guys. They're not going to give up on that. Don't be ridiculous. But as you said, there's not really a lot to sell here. Maybe they could sell one of the relievers, but I don't think anyone's really banged down the door for Gleyber Torres right now. Clint Frazier's injured anyway. Just not a really good picture right now for selling. So maybe something changes in the next couple of weeks, but we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. Ideally, the Yankees do something against the Red Sox, because if they continue to just tank themselves, then that might be answering their own question.
Yeah, I think if they just do nothing and continue to lose games, or maybe just squeak out only one or two wins in these next couple series against the Red Sox, I think the worst that they'll do is, instead of selling, they're just going to kind of stand pat and do nothing.
Yeah.
Because, again, I don't know what they have to sell that anybody wants outside of maybe like a reliever. But even then, like, Britton's been kind of hurt on and off. Chapman's just in a very, very bad situation right now. And, like, again, you don't really want to trade a Green or a Loaisiga, but maybe those guys? I don't know what they have. But hopefully they just kick everyone's ass over the next couple of weeks, add some pieces and go on a run, and we don't have to worry about what they can sell, because they don't need to.
Bingo. Bingo.
Yay! Optimism.
Yeah. Well, we don't have to get too much into the sell-buy talk. We'll have another couple weeks before we get really into the weeds with the trade deadline stuff. So we will cross that bridge when we get to it. Right now, the team is a little bit banged up, too, as we talked about. Miguel Andujar is on the injured list with a wrist sprain. Zach Britton had a left hamstring strain. He should be back very soon, but Michael King has been out because he hurt his middle finger. Would you like to explain what happened to him?
Yes, he strained his middle finger to say you to the Yankees offense.
That or the crush between weights, but I think I like your explanation better.
Yes.
But yeah, super unfortunate timing for him, because he had a rotation spot, and now that's kind of gone because Nestor sort of claimed it. It's really, really weird, but that's the world we live in right now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not really too concerned for Michael King getting, like, Wally Pipped if he comes back. I mean, I'm sure that there's going to be a spot in this rotation for him, especially, like, even just as a spot starter or whatever, or kicking Herman out if he's not pitching well. But
remember that Michael King had that preseason goal of 100 innings, no matter how I can get it, and he's at 48 and a third so far. So, you know, he'll find his way to it somehow, some way.
As long as his middle finger doesn't take him out for a lot longer. But yeah, no, as soon as, like, they started slotting him into the rotation, and, like, you know, he's actually pitching pretty solidly, like, for what you'd expect Michael King to be pitching. Like, he's not, like, blowing anybody away, but he's been very, very serviceable. So I've enjoyed it, and I'm really rooting for him to get to that 100.
Yeah. And I guess we do need to also know that Darren O'Day, I don't know if we'll actually see him back this season, or if it won't be until much later, because we didn't really get much details about it, but it sounded like he suffered a pretty serious hamstring injury with the same one that he had surgery on in 2018. And like they were saying he crumpled to the ground. So that's never a good sign.
No. And then like besides that, like what I think we also talked about a little bit earlier, Loaysi goes on the COVID IL. Aaron Boone, I think right before the break said he quote unquote feels good, but hasn't given any like timeline. So it's not like when Glaber hit the IL and they're like, oh no, we expect him back sooner than later and all that. I'm a little, concerned because, you know, COVID, but I don't know.
Yeah, I'm thinking that we'll probably get an update on him when they announce who their probable starting pitchers are for the upcoming series against the Red Sox, because they haven't announced that yet. And I feel like we'll get just a conference call with various updates like that. And ideally, this is just a quick little thing. Ben Loaysi will be back because the bullpen really needs him. He's been terrific this year. Green was a little gassed at the end of that series. And we have to talk about Aroldis Chapman too, because they tried to get him back into form in one game against the Mariners, and he threw a scoreless innings, but he threw a scoreless inning, but there were still a whole bunch of walks and bad control. So he's got to work his kinks out if the Yankees are going to have any hope.
Yeah. Like be better guy. Yeah. Like, I know he went to the All-Star game, but like, I kind of was hoping that he wouldn't go, not just because like, oh my God, mama, he doesn't deserve to go. None of that nonsense. But like, I was kind of hoping he took the time off, especially if it's a mechanics issue, to kind of, you know, work on that. But maybe, like, I know there's also like it's not really clear because they've also been talking about this like lingering fingernail issue, but like, if that's the case, why not just put him on the IL, get him better? I really don't know what's going on with him, but they need to figure it out fast. They can't just keep relying on Chad Green every other day, because he's gonna get burnt out if he isn't already.
right. Well, we'll take an ad break and we'll be right back. And we're back. Unless you have anything else, we're going to talk a little bit about the draft.
Yeah.
No, I refuse.
Like, no, I don't have anything else. I'm like, yeah, we can talk about the draft.
Yeah, we'll talk about the draft a little bit. We're adapting our Meet a Baby Bomber segments into a Be a Yankees draft pick or whatever you want to call it. We don't have any cool little themes that Effectively Wild has, but whatever. We are interested in the Yankees draft picks. I guess from the top, I mean, we're not going to go through the entire draft. Basically, Kunj and I both picked one guy to talk about, but we will also take a moment to talk about Trey Sweeney just because he's the top pick. And it seems like he is an infielder who could have some real impact on the Yankees' future. They seem to reach a little bit for him, but they've done a lot of scouting on him, and it seems like they're pretty confident that they made a good find in someone who maybe would not have been available to them with their second round pick.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely pretty exciting. I mean, I know there's some concerns about whether or not he's like that shortstop and his defensive position, but it seems like he's an impact bat. And like, for me, it's just like, all right, get the guy, see what he can do. If he can hit, you'll find a place to play him.
Yeah, and it's not like 20th overall pick is where you find a lot of these big gems too. Sometimes you'll hit big on a Corey Seager or Aaron Judge, who were, I think, both picked in the 20s. But for the most part, these are guys that sometimes are going to be a dice roll even in the first round. So maybe Trey Sweeney turns out to be a big hit. But we will have much more on him soon, as he says he's going to sign. So we'll see where he is assigned in the Yankee system. As a college bat, I anticipate him probably being in Tampa sometime very soon. And he can hang out with Jason Dominguez, who is there now too, which is kind of cool.
Oh yeah, that was a promotion. The Martian has arrived.
Yeah, the Martian has arrived in Tampa. Anthony Volpe, who is having a great first half with Tampa, is now up to Hudson Valley. He was their first round pick in 2019. So these kids are coming. I mean, they're in the low minors, but these should be some big parts of the Yankees' future. Especially Dominguez.
Yeah, I don't think, like, a lot of the Yankees' top prospects seem like they're like a few years away. They're probably in the lower tier of the system, but like, I do think their future is bright. I don't think they don't have anybody knocking at the door in Scranton. Like, yeah, you could talk about like Ojun Park or whoever, like maybe you should get a shot, but at the end of the day, we're talking about we're talking about the real prospects who like are exciting. I think, you know, the lower system, the lower tiers of the minors are packed with excitement for the Yankees. And whether that means they, you know, break out with the team in over the next couple of years, or the Yankees could even use them to get some pieces now over the offseason next year, it's still fun to see what they have and, you know, follow these young kids as they try and live out their dreams. Wow, that sounded a lot cheesier than I expected it to be.
Hey, cheesy, it can be good. Can be good.
Yes. I do love cheese.
All right. So who are we meeting for you?
So because I am a child, we're meeting Richard Fitz. Because
of course we are.
Because how did you expect me to choose anybody else besides Dick Fitz?
Of course. Gotta pick Dick Fitz.
He's from, Yeah, exactly, because he's the one that fits right in. Anyway, Fitz is from Helena, Alabama. He was drafted in the sixth round as the 183rd overall pick from Auburn University. What's cool about him is, like, last year during the COVID shortened season, a lot of scouts were talking about how he had, like, first round potential because he had, like, a 2.77 ERA, mostly just as a reliever, though. But then over the fall and stuff, like, you know, he had pitched pretty well and really, you know, gave his stock some improvement. But then this spring he hurt his foot, and that's kind of resulted in, like, not so great season for him. In 13 games this year at 8 starts, he has a 5.88 ERA, so it's not exactly exciting. But we're also talking about somebody that the Yankees got in the sixth round who has been marked as first round potential, so that's always good. What was cool, in the last week of May, he pitched an 8-inning shutout and allowed just one hit against Missouri and was named the SEC Pitcher of the Week. So that's fun. And his scouting report on MLB.com, I'm going to read exactly the scouting report because, you know, obviously we don't have a lot of stuff on him from the Yankee system because he's not there yet. But after operating with a low 90s sinker as a reliever, Fitz began employing a four-seam fastball as a starter. He showed the ability to sit at 93 to 95 miles per hour for several innings and reached 97 with quality vertical life on his heater last year and mostly held that velocity in 2021. He has two promising secondary pitches with his upper 80s changeup with some splitter action, currently a more reliable option than his improving mid-80s slider. Both have regressed this spring. So, again, he's taken a little bit of a step back this year, but hopefully a lot of that is just because of his foot injury. And what the other things that they're saying about him is because he's gotten better as he's grown into his, like, you know, he's a 6'3" guy. He's grown into his frame. They think he can handle a starter's workload, and his arm action and delivery are sound, quote, and he throws strikes with his entire arsenal. And adding to the package is his competitiveness, which draws as much praise as his stuff. So, you know, he goes out there, he battles every single time. And what I think is actually kind of a fun fact, it's really not, but just because I'm kind of a nerd. So Baseball America had him ranked as the 222nd best prospect. MLB and MLB Pipeline had him ranked significantly higher, I think at 149. The middle ground between those two numbers is 182, and he was picked 183.
Whoa. Also, ranking him 222 is just retoo-packed. So
yes.
Gotta get that in there.
The ultimate retoo-packed.
Yeah, but Fitz was a guy who at one point was considered not just like a first round guy, but there was some chatter that with a good season, he could put himself in like the top 10 overall picks. And obviously that's not how things played out, but this is still a talent that if you get that in the sixth round, you sign up for that. And maybe he finds it, maybe he just peters out into nothing, but I think Richard Fitz could be a very, very sneaky good pick for the Yankees there.
Yeah, and, like, you know, it's a sixth round, so it's okay to take a little bit of risk here. And again, the upside is there, and the worst case scenario, he just kind of fizzles out, and it's like, oh, well, you took a shot.
Yeah, and once again, they drafted Tyler Hardman, Dick Fitz, and then Sean Hard.
The Yankees clearly had an agenda during this draft.
Also, Bailey Dees.
Yes.
Oh, man. There's some fun names in the mix there. Some other teams had more fun ones, like the other Max Muncy was really great. Yes.
Apparently, we have not reached the maximum Muncy just yet because we thought we had with one. Now there's two.
Yeah, I like, of all names, there's just another Max Muncy. Sure, whatever.
Yeah, and then there's also a guy in the draft who Gage Jump.
Oh, yeah, Gage Jump. That was a great one.
Like, I was kind of upset the Yankees didn't draft him, but hey, you know, shit happens.
They didn't get the jump on him.
They did not get the jump on him because they wanted to see where Dick fits in.
Exactly. Gage Jump was just not a horny enough name for them.
The Yankees, he was not thirsty enough.
Yeah, exactly. All right, well, my guy is actually not going to be a super unknown guy. My guy is actually the second round pick, Brendan Beck, who is a pitcher out of Stanford. Beck is originally from Corona High School in Corona, California. His older brother, Tristan, was a draft pick by the Braves and is now in the Giants system. I learned that apparently his grandfather was the equivalent to an All-American in rugby, apparently. Really random. It's called the Welsh Cap. So that's fun. On a more relevant note, Beck is a pretty good pitcher. He's a right-handed pitcher, 6'2". His fastball gets up to 93 miles an hour. He's got a good curveball and a slider and a pretty decent changeup too. So he's a good pitchability guy. He's got a pretty wide arsenal. On the day that we were recording, Damon Oppenheimer, who runs the draft, he said in the conference call that they already see Brendan Beck as someone who's close to the majors, and they don't really see a lot of development necessary, just focusing on like building up innings, which is a pretty good sign that they got a mostly finished product already, which is pretty good for a second round pick and a someone who's already a college senior. At Stanford, Beck had a 3.11 ERA over 4 seasons in 289 to third innings. And this past season, his whip was under 1 at 0.985, and he struck out 11.8 per 9 innings. So very good. He also has got a lot of moxie, because this is my favorite thing about him. Stanford had a game against Texas Tech in June, and even though they were playing in 106 degree heat, he decided that he was going to wear Stanford's black jersey because, quote, it was going to be Texas Tech's funeral.
That's awesome.
Yeah, he's some of that confidence in the Yankee system. And I don't know if Beck is going to be like a big pitcher for them. He seems, just on the surface, he seems like a guy who might be more of like a David Phelps type starter, maybe a little bit better than that because he has a higher talent than David Phelps. But that's still someone who can help the Yankees a bit.
Yeah, Oppenheimer's comments kind of give me a little bit of pause. Like, I'm not going to get too excited about that just because, like, I think you mentioned this in our Slack, but I was thinking it too. Just like, we know what happened with Jake Lindgren and talking about fast-tracking a player. So I'm cautiously optimistic, but it'll be cool to see if, you know, like, how quickly he turns around where he starts off at. But a little fun fact, I was really preparing this game for you while we recorded the podcast. I was going to have you play a little game. Are you familiar with the Jeopardy, like the before and after, where like you get a clue and you have to basically get two answers and you find the one in common?
Yeah, I think so.
So do you want to play a quick round of that?
Sure.
Literally one question. If you win, you get nothing. And if you lose, you still get nothing.
Yes. All right. Surprise I always dreamed of. And the penalty exactly I always dreamed wanted. Of.
Yes. So this is your clue. 2021 to 2024.
2021 to 2024?
No, 2021 to the number 2, and then 2020, the number 4.
I don't know.
Brendan Beck Way.
Ah, yes. Very, very, very good.
I don't know why, but I spent about 15 minutes thinking about this before we recorded this morning while I was eating my lunch.
Good. Good. Well, I should have known to think of Beck Way, since he was your Meet a Baby Bomber, if not last week, then the week before.
Right. Also because Brendan Beck, you were just talking about him.
Yeah, I also got to stop. I think I've occasionally accidentally referred to him as Brandon Beck a couple times, but no, Brendan Beck, not Brandon. Brendan.
Anyway, that was my fun Baby Bomber game. I hope you enjoyed it. Tune in next week for Not That.
Yeah.
The first and last edition of this.
Yeah, it was so successful though.
Yay.
If we want to get irrationally optimistic about Brendan Beck, Baseball America compared him to what Shane Bieber looked like in college. So hey, maybe there's something there, but probably not, because Shane Bieber, I think, may have been using some spider tack. So we'll see.
No, he's great.
Oh, good.
Brendan Beck's gonna be Brendan Beck's gonna win the Cy Young this year.
Yeah. Oh, good. This year. Wow, that's fast. Damon Oppenheimer was right. He's already a finished product.
Yes. Nailed it.
Done. All right. So should we move on to the Yankee and Mitre of the week?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So the Yankee and Mitre of the week. Woo. Who do you have for Yankee of the week?
So my Yankee of the week is going to be none other than Gerrit Cole.
He's good.
Obviously, he's very, very good. So, you know, since the sticky stuff became a thing, Cole struggled to like an ERA that's over 5. But obviously on the Saturday before the All-Star break, he held, like what I mentioned earlier, is like American League's arguably their best offense to no runs and pitched a complete game shutout, including his Mike Mussina moment where he told Boone to just off and leave him alone. Sorry for making you have to do a Mitre horn twice.
Beautiful.
All that was that after he was battling like flu-like symptoms and getting like IVs in Seattle. So this is exactly what the Yankees paid him for. And obviously there's been a lot of concern about whether or not they're going to get their quote unquote money's worth with the spider tech and like sticky stuff crackdown. But while he doesn't need to do this every time out, he needs more outings like this where he shows why he's the Yankees ace. And if he keeps doing that, at least for the second half, the Yankees chances are going to get even better, because that's what they need. A lot of the last month or so has been frustrating with just, you know, the offense not being able to score, but before that, we were at least able to look forward to Gerrit Cole starts, and it was nice to kind of see that. And he did that in 129 pitches, man, which was like the most thrown by a starter in the last like 3 years, I think.
Yeah, that was just an outing we don't really see anymore. And part of that was necessitated by the fact that, you know, Chapman's been completely unreliable. Lasagna was not available and Green was pretty gassed. So it's like either that or they go to Chapman and Cole's like, no, I will do this if my arm falls off.
The ninth inning, like Altuve got that like that single off of him, which is just like annoying. Just like stop pitching, just walk him. But whatever, at least he didn't hit the home run there. And then what was really cool is like when Boone came out to talk to him, and Gerrit Cole was just like, "No, I'm finishing this game. This is my game," with a lot more expletives in there. But he's like, "I'm finishing this game," and then he just proceeds to finish the game on 3-pitch strikeout.
Yeah, that was a game that I only was able to really catch up on mostly after the fact. I was without signal for most of it, so I was only able to occasionally check in, and like my phone was just not really cooperating. So I'd see like, oh, it's only 1-0. That's not really gonna be enough. Then I learned later that Gerrit Cole pitched the whole thing and threw 129 pitches, and it was sort of like several years back when Michael Pineda struck out 16, and I wasn't around to watch that game either. And I got an update on my phone about it, and the reaction was the same, which is like, wait, what? He did what?
So what you're saying is you need to stop paying attention to the Yankees for the pitching to be great.
Apparently.
I think we found the solution, guys.
Well, it's a noble sacrifice, but yeah. I will bear this burden. As you said, if we could just look forward to Cole starts again, then that would add a lot of stability to the rotation, because still, even after that start, he has a lot to prove to just show that he is still a very, very good pitcher without the sticky tack, because he was on a real rough stretch when we last podcasted and he got roughed up by the Mets.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully that's all in the past.
Garrett Good for right now, at least.
Yeah.
Who's your Yankee of the week?
My Yankee of the week is going to be Aaron Judge. His week wasn't like standout or anything. He was good. He had a .556 slugging percentage and a pair of home runs. He had the home run to help Gerrit Cole win that 1-0 game. So kudos on that. I respected the trolling attempt, even if it didn't really work out with Altuve being a douche the next day. So, but I appreciated the hustle, and he acquitted himself well at the All-Star game too. And I like that he got to be part of the pregame ceremonies that honored Hank Aaron's widow too.
Yeah, no, it was cool. And like, obviously he got on base, he scored the first run for the AL, so that's always fun. It's nice to have like a legitimate all-star representing your team rather than like the, oh crap, we need to have at least one person represent each team pick. So
Gregory Soto, there you go.
There you go. Aaron Judge is obviously a worthy all-star. He was a starter, so good for him.
Yeah, I like him.
I think during the all-star game, I think it was Lindsay Adler, she tweeted like, Aaron Judge has just experienced being driven in from scoring position.
The pain is real.
Yes, but it was amusing.
I'll also admit that when I saw him dart for the play, I'm like, oh no, are we going to see some Yankees toot planning in the All-Star game? That would be very fitting. But then it's like, oh wait, no, it's Aaron Judge. He actually knows what he's doing.
Yeah, right. There's a reason he's actually there.
Yeah, the other guys are not allowed. Okay. So who's your Mitra of the week?
So this is probably going to be a little bit harsh or unfair, but it's going to be Chad Green.
Yeah.
Like we're talking about, he's definitely a little overworked since Britton went on the IL. The Loaisiga went on the IL. Chapman just like farts every time he's out there. And in the first game of the Houston series, he pitched 2 shutout innings to help seal the win. So like, that's great. But he still needs to not go in and give up 6 runs. I mean, technically, he only got charged 4 runs. The first two were charged to Herman because those were his base runners. But he was brought in to kind of do damage control, and it went the complete opposite way. Plus, it was the second time this season where he gave up a 3-run home run to Jose Altuve that ended up costing the Yankees the chance to sweep and a game. So that's not good. Stop doing that. Stop doing that now.
It's a deserving quote honor this time, because as you said on this podcast, if you're given a 5-run lead, even if it was like a 5-run lead with some base runners on, had been chipped away a little bit because of Herman, you still got to get that done. That's not a hard inning to complete. And I know that the Astros have a really good offense, and maybe the Yankees were lucky that they were able to shut out the Astros through the first 2 games, especially with that first one with Nestor Cortez and friends. But still, you got to get that job done.
Yeah. And you can give up a run or two, whatever, that's fine. But you can't give up 6 runs before you get 3 outs.
Right. All right. Well, my Mitra of the Week is not going to be as much of a huge blame thing because I think Chad Green was, I could have just given it to Chad Green as well, and it'd be fair because that was just such a nightmare. But I'm going to give this one to Brett Gardner because he's, again, in one of those stretches where he looks like he should retire, like yesterday.
So like all of 2021, do you mean?
Yeah, pretty much. He's had like a couple good weeks, and other than that, it's just been trash after trash. It's bad. And it's not fun to see a guy who used to be such a good baseball player look this washed. But Matt Provenzano, a former Pinstripe Valley writer, good friend of ours, has like made this point in chat with that we have where he talks about like the Yankees basically have been going to the Brett Gardner well year after year on 1 year contracts, and this is finally just the one that they got burned. So this is probably going to happen eventually, and it sucks that it's happened, but he probably should not be playing anymore.
No, yeah, that's a very good point. Like, at least they've been kind of safe with it in the sense that they haven't been handing out like 4 or 5 year deals to him. They've just gone year to year. And, you know, for the most part, it's turned out well. Like, you get frustrated with him at times, and you get, for this year, you just didn't want to see him as an everyday player, but you're fine with bringing him back. Like, okay, well, whatever. He's good in short spurts. And again, this year was the one time that they actually went into it, one of the times too, they actually went into it thinking, like, hey, we don't want him to play every day. He's not going to be the everyday outfielder. He's just here to be Brett Gardner. And obviously, injuries happened and bad play happened that forced him to play a lot more than he should. Yeah. I very much don't want to see him on the team next year.
Yeah, and it's right now it's especially tough because both Andujar and Frazier are on the injured list, and we don't have any idea when they're coming back, and it's not like they were really hitting much anyway. So they're just kind of stuck with him unless they want to roll the dice on a Trey Ambergy or Floreal, and I feel like that's not going to happen. So
update. That actually is happening. Trey Ambergy will reportedly be called up to the major leagues on Thursday.
I guess in Tim LaCastro, we trust. I'd rather see LaCastro than Brett Gardner.
Yeah, anyway. Which is why, like, it'd be nice if the Yankees went out and made a move. But, you know, we're still a couple weeks away from that because you're really not going to see any big names being traded this early on still. I mean, we're 2 weeks away. So
remember that All-Star game when Manny Machado was still in the Orioles? Then, like, but he was basically already on the Dodgers.
Yeah, that was weird.
Yeah, we don't have any situations like that right now, but that was really funny.
On a related note, somebody had an idea that for when Trevor Story participated in the home run derby, that the ball should be like those gender reveal balls that like explode with the color of his future team.
Yes, Gary Phillips, he tweeted that. That was good. That was good. What if it was purple? He'd be like, no, I'm stuck forever.
He'd be like Kumar Rocker, who just decided, then, you know what? I'm not going to let the Rockies redraft me and not waive his.
That's so funny.
For those that don't know, apparently if you've been drafted by a team and then choose not to sign with them, go back to school, and then re-enter the draft, you have to sign a waiver that allows them to redraft you. And Kumar Rocker, who was drafted by the Mets this year, was drafted by the Rockies in 2018, I think it was, maybe earlier. And obviously he went back to school. He went to Vanderbilt. And this year he did not sign the waiver to let the Rockies redraft him. So he knew he couldn't control much about where he went, but he could control at least that going to Colorado. Good for you, guy.
Yeah. It's like, all right.
And who can blame him?
Well, maybe we'll see him in Queens one day. Hopefully he doesn't become a huge menace because that would be annoying.
Yeah.
Also, I'm not really jazzed about the Red Sox ending up with Marcelo Meyer, who probably should have been the number one overall pick. I was glad they didn't end up with Jack Leiter, but Marcelo Meyer could be a problem.
Yeah, it would have been a lot nicer if the Pirates just did. They had one job.
Yeah, they had one job, and they took some other guy who is probably going to be fine, but I don't think he's going to be as good as Marcelo Meyer or Jack Leiter for that matter. But
and the Rangers did their job.
Yeah. Kudos. They were just like, yeah, that's nice that the Red Sox had all these rumors about them with Jack Leiter, but too bad you don't get to pick before us. We're taking Jack Leiter.
Exactly. Good job.
Yeah. That kid's going to be really good, I think. I'm just glad he's not in the division.
On the last note, though, about Kumar Rocker, I think the annual Subway Series should be replaced with a Judge versus Alonso home run derby.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Clearly, all these other
competitors. I want that on the record.
All these other competitors are just not really putting up a real fight against Alonso, and Judge seems like doesn't want to do the derby again unless it's at Yankee Stadium, which is too bad. But hey, just do like a swing off, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Like, it's funny because like everyone else, like they seem to be going like max effort, and like, you know, Trey Mancini put up a great fight for Alonso at the end there. Like, and you know, it was just a cool finals. obviously, you know, Trey Mancini's story is, you know, very cool, very inspirational. And then Pete Alonso's just there like, all right, this is nothing. He didn't even break a sweat the whole time.
Yeah, he's just bobbing his head absurd. While some kid gets carted off with a torn ACL. Yeah. Like, sure. Great.
He was in the zone, man. He was in the zone.
Yeah, man. That's good fun.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think we are about expired our limit here. So we will let you go from here. You can follow us on Twitter at Pinstripe Alley. Follow me on Twitter at Merns PSA. Where are you on Twitter this week?
Just leave me alone until I'm healthy.
Yeah, just don't at Cringe. At MLB, make sure that they are serious about getting rid of the 7-inning doubleheaders and the runner on second rule, because that might be happening. Yes.
Yeah, Manfred did not seem very committed to that, which is nice. But I think somebody in the Pinstripe Alley comment section was like, this could just be a conspiracy theory because he knows the players like it, so he's going to try and keep it, but just blame it on them, saying, hey, I just said we can get rid of it.
Yeah.
Which wouldn't surprise me at all, because Rob Manfred is evil. But hey, I'll take it for right now.
Yeah, well, we'll see. All right, so that'll do it for us. Hopefully the Yankees don't shit the bed against the Red Sox this weekend. We have high hopes, clearly. So let's see what happens, and go Yankees.
Yay!